I'm going to call the Jobs and Economic Development Committee together into order. I want to get the agenda done as soon as I can because people have other things that they have on their agenda, their schedules for tonight. There are three bills on the agenda today. I'm going to not follow the agenda here because my bill is up first. But we are moving as a committee, House File 2369, the Isaacson Apprenticeship Program Federal Conformity Changes, and Senate File 1926, Building Code Inspection Authority of Local Units of Government Regulated, to rules. So first we'll take House File 2369, the Isaacson Apprenticeship Program. All those in favor of, what do I have to say again? Motion to re-refer House File 2369 to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. It's on its way to rules.
I have no idea why that's
House File, Senate File 1926, McNamer, Building Code Inspection Authority of Local Units of Government. The motion is to re-refer Senate File, I think I already said it, Senate File 1926 to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. Those two are done. Next is my bill. And unless there's objection, I'll just do it right from here.
I object.
I would like to put in front of the committee House File 2740, and we're doing this one, right? Yeah. And members, I have an amendment to this particular bill, the DE2 amendment. It's a delete all amendment. So in order to get it in the order that the author would like, I will move the DE2 amendment. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Members, I'll explain the bill, and then I'm going to call a couple of witnesses, and there's probably a few, most of them are for, and then one wants to explain the financing of it. What the DE2 amendment does is create a transfer from the assigned risk plan over at the Department of Commerce, and this is money that insurers pay in the work comp insurers pay into the system for the reason to assign risk. So if you can't get work comp insurance, you get it through this particular fund. What I am doing is with this bill is for a good number of years there has been the complaint by one group or another about somebody, a group of people called scrubbers, and what they do is they go through the hospital bills and they say we're going to pay this or we're not going to pay this. And one of the big reasons that they don't, or that they do that, is the work comp insurance is one of is the only one I know of, and maybe there are others, but this is the only one that I know of a diagnostic related pay schedule. And there's been arguments, and I don't want to misquote somebody, one group or the other, but there's been arguments. The two groups have said that they can't agree. There's always a problem. There's this reason or that reason. So what this bill does is it moves the $10 million from the assigned risk program if there's an excess of $50 million in the program to a fund over at the Department of Labor and Industry, which will cover the cost of these two organizations, the insurance companies and the hospitals, to implement this plan, which will then eliminate the scrubbers, or most of them. In that fashion, we'll get, hopefully, faster treatment, faster paying, less problems in the court systems or appeals to the ALJs, and hopefully some other savings. And, you know, I typically take the workers' sides in this particular system, but at this particular time, I'm not even worried about what the workers are getting. You'll notice I don't think there's a whole lot of the labor people here today, because they have said that this doesn't seem to affect them. This is really between two business entities, and what we're just trying to do is get them to move to a system that everyone else uses. Now, sometimes the best one, the easiest one to explain it is the Medicare, where they have a schedule of payments. So if you break your arm or you have an eye surgery or you have whatever, they have a schedule that they actually pay. That's the schedule that they're going to pay. And sometimes hospitals or insurance companies will discount, or Medicaid schedule plus 10% or 1,000%. I don't know all those particular numbers. But what this bill does is pays for, and I better read it off the back, off the next page, for the purpose of this section, reasonable and necessary system reform, the cost of analyzing data to determine the anticipated cost and savings of implementing the system, organizational changes, determining how an organization would implement the groupers or other software, upgrading some of the software, purchasing of cost of educating and training, and integrating the new system into the electronic billing remittance. This bill covers everything that could possibly go wrong as far as we know. So with that, I would like to call up our testifiers, and we have testifying today. We have Bob Johnson from the Insurance Federation, Mary Krenke from the Hospital Association, Ben Gerber from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, John Rakowski, I'm not sure if he's here to answer questions or testify. He's probably, we may call him down, but he'll be reluctant to come, I would be assured. And Peter Brickwood from the Minnesota Department of Commerce. So, which one of the three of you would like to go first? Mr. Gerber. Yeah. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ben Gerber. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Mr. Gerber, if you could.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. We use a lot of acronyms around here, and I heard one that I'm not familiar with. You referred to ALJs.
Yeah. Can you tell me? Administrative Law Judges. They are the people who do most of the legal work over at the Department of Labor and Industry and with Work Comp. I'm sorry to have interrupted you, Mr. Gerber.
I'll let that slide.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ben Gerber. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce on labor issues. Thank you for having us today. I know that this issue just came up, and I think one of the things that Representative or Chair Mahoney did discuss is that last year we had a workers' comp reform package, and there were some issues with it. And one of the things that we have committed as the chamber to work on with the hospitals as well as the insurers is a reform package that may include reimbursement reform, as Chair Mahoney mentioned, but there's also other things, and that's why we have a list here. Just to point out, it's not just limited to a Medicare-based diagnosis-related group, or MSDRG, but looking at litigation expense reform, worker safety training, administrative costs, or other reforms. And just to explain what's going to happen, the Department of Labor and Industry, Commissioner Peterson, is convening a group of stakeholders this summer, made up of insurers. Labor would be there as well. So laborers, insurers, hospitals, to find out how we can reform the system, make it cheaper, make sure that workers get quick and efficient care, so everyone's happy. What we are expecting is that whenever these bills go through, there's a little shared pain on everyone, whether it's the insurers, the hospitals, businesses. And to help reduce that pain, we think that it's appropriate to use the money. The assigned risk pool is essentially a public insurance company that insures the highest cost employers. So I think the example we usually use is ditch diggers, things that the private market won't cover. And whenever there's more than $50 million left over in the fund, that money is transferred back to the general fund. And I know the Department of Commerce is here to answer that question. We think it's appropriate to use that money for workers' comp reform because that is money that was paid for by employers into the assigned risk pool. And if there's an excess, it means that the premiums weren't calculated right or they didn't have as many instances where they had to pay out as much. And so it makes sense to use this money for reform. And I know I want to be short, so I'll let Mary Krinke from the hospitals explain why they're here supporting it, as well as Bob Johnson from the Insurance Federation, why they think this is a reasonable use of funds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. And I just want to thank Representative Mahoney, as well as Bob Johnson from the Insurance Federation and Ben Gerber from the Chamber of Commerce. As many of you all know, the Hospital Association has sometimes been opposed to previous workers' compensation reform efforts because so much of the attention has only been on the medical costs, and all the attention has been on, well, we have to cut what we pay the hospitals. We have to make the changes on the payment side. So we're actually looking forward to a different process this time where we've been invited to the table, where we are considered partners in this, and we are looking for what I would say are system reforms that bring about savings that could involve, quite frankly, cuts to hospitals, but would also involve administrative cost savings, which is exactly what Representative Mahoney referred to when he was talking about the bill scrubbers. So we're looking at how we can save the system money rather than just cuts on one side. So we think that the process that is in place now, with some potential funding for some outreach activities and as well as this term grouper, which I know you all may not know what a grouper is, but a grouper is a software package that helps group together diagnostic-related codes. It's not a fish, Representative Gunther. It used to be a fish, but now a grouper is a software package where a provider would get paid a specific payment for several services that had been grouped together rather than getting paid for each individual services. And overall, when payment systems have moved to a grouper, it has saved the system money. I don't want to say it's the only solution. I don't want to say it's necessarily perfect, but in other states that have done this, it has saved some money. So just as a closing comment, very thankful for Representative Mahoney trying to set up a different process this time, and to my two partners up here. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Krinke. Mr. Johnson, if you'd please identify yourself for the tape.
Well, Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. And I'll similarly thank Mary Krinke and Ben Gerber. We had a chance to meet, work through the language. And I know the committee, we had a hearing during the earlier in the session, and the Department of Labor and Industry presented their study, Commissioner Peterson and Deputy Commissioner Chris Iden. My comment would be, I think this draft language, Mr. Chairman, kind of nicely follows what Commissioner Peterson, the work product, and identified a lot of these areas that you actually have in the amendment in terms of the litigation expenses and bill scrubbing one issue, but there was quite a listing of issues that was actually identified as part of a system reform that we need to have discussed. So I think from our industry's perspective, this complements Commissioner Peterson's report in terms of a follow-up and for the use of this money. If this money is going to be moved out of the assigned risk plan, it would be nice to have it used in the work comp system. It was paid by employers. It's in a fund that's intended to pay for injured workers' benefits. And I think we all agree and commit to the fund has to be solvent. The monies need to be there. Commissioner Rothman obviously is in charge of that, setting the premiums and making certain that it's solvent. So, I mean, we're committed to the solvency and the integrity of that fund's finances. So I think for me that needs to be a given. But assuming that given is met, then I think this approach, Mr. Chairman, again, it's complementary to it. There's a commitment to have on the table what we agree needs to be on the table as part of this discussion. There's a lot of work to be done to get to that. There'll be a lot of policy issues to work through, but I have a lot of confidence in Commissioner Ken Peterson and Deputy Commissioner Chris Iden and the staff, professional staff, and the expertise that they have in the study of these issues. So we're committed to the process to you to get to some good results, and I think this might be a complement to get to those good results that we need to have. So thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And are there any questions for the testifiers? Representative Albright, and then Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at a letter that was delivered to the Chair Mahoney by Commissioner Peterson. And I'm just wondering, and maybe you've already responded to that in your comments, but I'm wondering if each one of you three would comment in terms of the particular nature of this letter, how it would affect each one of your industries. You're looking at that, I'm wondering if maybe Chair Mahoney might just give us a synopsis in terms of his comments on the letter.
Thank you, Representative Albright. And my thoughts in the letter these three issues that Commissioner Peterson brought forth are issues that still need to be fixed, and they are fixable. Reimbursement is not contingent on enactment of an MSDRG system by the legislature. I think we can work through that one. I don't want to tie us into that exact system, but because if the hospitals and the insurers and the workers' comp group comes up with a better system, I'm happy for them to do that, just so long as we get a system better than the one we have right now. Cost eligibility for reimbursement, and I think there was some conversations about that, so I'll leave that one to the testifiers. And then I think we can also place limits, and I think there should be limits on the reimbursements. This bill was brought together in the last 48 hours to maybe a little 54 hours, so that a couple of things got missed. And we should fix that as this moves forward before it would ever be put into law. So if the testifiers would care to speak to it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I can go in order. One of the reasons why it's important not to have this contingent, as Chair Mahoney said, is we don't know what the group that's meeting over the summer will come up with. There are systems outside of the MSDRG system, or we could come up with something different. There are other systems in workers' compensation, including the Wilson-McChain system, which is an opt-out between construction workers, construction labor, and business, where they have their own system. So if we foreclose other opportunities, we've really limited the discussion between labor, business, hospitals, and insurers. So I think it would be unfortunate to do that. And I had a conversation with Deputy Commissioner Iden after we saw this letter about that. I know the department's here, so I'll let them speak to what they're comfortable with. But I feel like we were able to, from my perspective, address that concern based on foreclosing opportunities. We, as Chair Mahoney said, and I'll take responsibility, we weren't able to have a conversation with the Deputy Commissioner before the hearing to work through some of these issues. So one of the things we missed was, well, what type of reimbursements could be made? It sounds like hopefully we're going to work on language that would allow the commissioner pre-approval. So I think this language, and it was an oversight, could allow a hospital right now or an insurer to make an expenditure in anticipation of this reform. And under the way the language is, the commissioner could be forced into reimbursing them. I don't think that would happen, but we don't want to leave that open. So we're going to make sure that is a loophole that's closed. And the other one is really important, too, and in my conversations with the deputy commissioner, I made sure to address, we don't know how much money is going to be here. Like I said, this is a fund that employers pay into. It's used for injured employees, and if there's excess money, it is sent back to the general fund. But we don't know how much there's going to be. There's an accounting that will be done this summer. And if we say that no one entity can have more than X percent, well, what if there's only $500,000 or $1 million there? And workers' compensation, that's not a ton of money, and we want to set up a pilot program between one insurer and one hospital. If we have that limiting language in there, we can't do that. And so we think it's important to not do that. Now, what I will say is in the conversations that the chamber has had with the hospital association and the insurers, is that there's the Workers' Comp Advisory Council, where this anticipated reform next year will have to go through. As part of that package, which the money will then be spent on, we believe that we will make sure, and Chair Mahoney serves on that committee, that there are restrictions in place. Once we know what the amount of money is and what the reforms are done, we'll make sure that as part of that bill, if, for example, we go to a DRG system, that no more than X percent may be able to go to one hospital or one insurer. So I wanted, now that's on the record, that you have our commitment to do that and make sure that no one abuses this appropriation as well.
And I suspect the other two would commit to all three of those particulars also.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing heads nod. So, Representative, did you have a follow-up?
I do, Mr. Chair. Just a couple brief ones for Mr. Gerber. To the point, the third asterisk on the letter with regard to no limit placed, are we establishing an unexpected precedent for reimbursements if there is no limit?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't believe we are setting a precedent. This is, again, this money won't be spent until the Workers' Comp Advisory Council moves forward with a reform package, and within that reform package, we will have limitations. If we put that in there now, we're foreclosing what we might be able to do, especially since we don't know how much money will be there.
And Representative Albright, I have an amendment to make this a one-time appropriation and available to it until it's spent, so that's coming.
And maybe to that point, and maybe that would answer my follow-on question, I'm just wondering, given the fact that there may be years in which there is no money to continue to fund this project or this program, I'm wondering if an amendment would be pertinent to establish a minimum threshold for funding. And maybe you're talking about the excesses to $10 million. Is that getting at that from a top end versus the low end?
I think the $10 million is, I want to make sure that we leave the $50 million in there, and then the $10 million would be the maximum that they could draw out of this this fund. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but...
So the question maybe to Mr. Gerber is, what happens if we have $50,100,000. We have an excess, but it's really not material to work with. So I'm saying, what if we said that the surplus in excess of $50 million with an initiation of a surplus of, say, $5 million? You'd have to go to five. No. It's almost like a reserve requirement, so you'd actually fund it at 55 knowing that you'd keep the $50 million in there, but the $5 million would be available.
I understand what you're saying.
Mr. Chair, just to point out, on line 1.21, it is a one-time appropriation. So this is a one-time thing. I think having a conversation up here, we would be fine with that. Although, you know, there's still things that can be done with $100,000 that are, you know, there a lot of worker safety training can be done with $100,000 and a lot of outreach, and that helps injured workers make sure that, one, they don't get hurt, and two, that employers have a safer workplace and less likelihood that they'll have to pay higher premiums. So I'm a little concerned. I think we would definitely entertain a limit, but just to be clear that, you know, $100,000 can still do good and or still help people, employers and employees. So I do, again, if the committee wanted to entertain that, we wouldn't be opposed to it, but just to be clear, something can be done with small amounts of money.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, my intent is not to diminish the import of any money spent on workers' comp, but more to prevent watering the plant and let it dry up on the vine without additional nurturing.
Yeah, and Mr. Gerber, Representative Albright, I certainly hear you. Let me think about that, because as this thing moves, it would move in rules, and then it might be taken up in the Budgetary Conference Committee, and we could certainly kind of fix it before it gets there. That is a good idea. Representative Gunter, you had a question.
I have my question was taken by Representative Albright's, one of his questions. But I do have a statement to make. I think this is very creative on the chairman's part. and I think this is a significant improvement on what we usually have done in a work comp advisory council.
I think they do wonderful work in the work comp advisory.
I was on it.
Are there any other questions? Representative Fabian, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's just a general question about the assigned risk plan. Can somebody walk me through, I mean, what type of revenue does it generate each year?
Representative Fabian, if I could, let's get these witnesses out of here, and we'll bring down the Department of Commerce, which should be able to answer that particular question. Thank you. Unless
Thank
you want
you,
to
Mr.
stick
Chairman.
Around.
Yeah.
Mr. Brickwitty, right? Did I get that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Peter Brickwitty, Department of Commerce. You've got it quite correct.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape, and we will. I'd actually like you to give us a short presentation on the assigned risk program and how that fund works.
Mr. Chairman, Peter Brickwitty, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I think actually the description of the basic mechanics of what the plan exists for was covered by the previous testifiers, but happy to answer any questions about the how current law transfers dollars to the general fund budget reserve, which was alluded to in the earlier testimony too, and happy to answer any questions from you, Representative Fabian,
on how the mechanics of the fund work. Would you like to ask your question now or... Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brickwitty, I'm just, you know, we're talking about $50 million in this bill and $10 million. If we were to have a spreadsheet in front of us that shows revenues and expenses and so forth, what kind of dollars are we talking about total in the course of a biennium or a fiscal year? Where do the funds come from? How much are paid out, how much is normally left, that sort of stuff.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, that's a level of detail that I don't have at hand for you right this second, but would happy to put together such a spreadsheet if you would like. I certainly can speak to how current law requires the transfer of what's defined as excess surplus from the assigned risk plan to the general fund budget reserve. Each year in the event that that excess surplus exists. That is, that excess surplus is the amount of assets in excess of the amount needed to pay all current liabilities of the plan. Generally, that number is $50 million. And so the way that the department receives actuarial memo and work that indicates what the fund balance is at the end of the calendar year. The assigned risk plan operates on a fiscal calendar that matches up with the calendar year as opposed to the state fiscal year. And so the department receives that memo traditionally in June for indicating what the asset level is in the fund at the end of the preceding calendar year. So, for example, we expect to receive that final certified asset amount for what was in the fund as of December 31st, 2013, in June of this year. And so at that point, if there are reserves in, assets in excess of $50 million, then we notify the Commissioner of Management and Budget, who initiates the process to transfer those assets above $50 million to the General Fund Budget Reserve. And I defer to MMB on the technical details of how that transfer occurs, because it involves liquidating assets, and that's beyond my expertise on how that happens, because it's not an account in the state treasury.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just kind of, I was going to ask why, as you were getting started, why are we on a calendar year as opposed to a fiscal year? But I think it's abundantly clear to me as to why the legislature has put this on a calendar year instead of a fiscal year, because then when people get here and they need an extra amount of money to spend on, they can find it someplace else and they can spend it on other things, as opposed to making sure that we're taking care of, number one, the solvency, well, I won't say solvency, but the ratepayers that paid this in. And Mr. Chair, if that's what we're trying to fix here, I applaud you.
Well, Mr. Fabian, you're not a freshman any longer.
Well, this is... It would be pretty hard for me to go back to the streets in my district and talk to business owners who may be paying into the assigned risk plan and have to answer questions about what are you guys doing with the assigned risk plan surpluses. So
I've got a couple.
Now we could probably do that in a lot of other areas too, but let's just start with the first one here, okay?
Representative Fabian, I'm trying to use the assigned risk dollars in a fashion that is more aligned with work comp than it has at other times. That is not to say in the future that something might happen and that would go off by the wayside, but this particular bill, I think, actually helps work comp and the whole system. And every once in a while, we get to do the right thing up here, and I'm hoping that this is one of those times. So Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am concerned on line 1.21, as was pointed out by Mr. Gerber, that this is a one-time appropriation. So as surpluses are generated in the future, we're not talking about them at all. We're just talking about this one today for the time being. Correct?
That Representative Fabian, that is correct.
So I would hope, Mr. Chair, if I may,
yes,
that as we move forward, that there can be consensus on both sides of the aisle to.
I'm sorry.
I'm hoping that there can be consensus to take some precautions to make sure that rates are adjusted or something, so that as we move forward, we're not doing this. A tale of the Hun raid here, you might say, but yeah, thank you.
Mr. Bickley, do they adjust the rates periodically?
Mr. Chairman, the rates are set by the department. The excess surplus is predominantly, as I understand it, and I'm going to venture beyond my liberal arts degree to talk about actuarial sciences for a moment. My understanding is that traditionally when there is excess surplus, it is in large part usually used on account of the investment income that accrues to the fund based on how the fund performed during the course of the year. And so rate adjustments are within the purview of the Department of Commerce. They have occurred. However, the variation in what the excess surplus amount is from year to year has much more to do with the performance of the market rather than the rates that are set.
And there have been multiple transfers out of that particular fund over the years.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is correct. The practice of appropriating excess out of the assigned risk plan predates the current administration.
It goes way back. So I suspect you might have a visit in your office, Mr. Representative Fabian, by the Department of Commerce, and you can find out the shocking truth about the assigned risk plan.
Sure, there's lots of blame to go around, Mr. Chair.
I had a couple of questions. Well, Representative Albright, did you have a question that you wanted to ask?
I do, and for the testifier, you just mentioned that the excess is born more out of investment performance. From an actuarial perspective, would it not be correct that the excess is born more out of an experience for the pool itself rather than the investment performance of the portfolio?
Mr. Bricklin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Albright, I would have to check. Your experience in the field is far beyond mine, so I would want to check with our staff for the precise answer of your question. My understanding from speaking to staff prior to the hearing was that in the performance of the fund or the existence of excess surplus has traditionally been the result of the performance of the fund in the market, but I can follow up with you on the particular.
I'm sorry, just for that request, just to further that on, I'm just wondering if we could see the rolling average of investment performance as well as the experience rating for the morbidity tables that you follow.
Better write that one down.
I will. We'll make sure we get it correct, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Albright.
And members, I see no other questions. What I will say, if these funds are not used, they at a certain point, and is it would be 2017, I think it is, the balance in the fund above $50 million rolls into the general fund. And that's what they've always, that's what they've done with this pretty I can't remember when that actually passed. It was in the past few years, though. So I'm not going to worry about the exact date and time in place. But that's as we are right now. Now, members, I know we all have a variety of other things that we want to do this evening. I get to go sit in another committee hearing. And seeing no other questions, my motion, and I'll give you my assurances that if this sees the light of day in the conference committee, we will make some adjustments to this particular bill in terms of the, you have to have a minimum before you pull it out, and some other things in this bill. But I wanted the committee to have kind of a sense of what I was trying to do, because one of the other bodies is just pulling money out of it. And I don't think that they should be the only ones to pull money out of the committee, you know, out of the fund. And I'm not entirely positive what the hell they're doing with it, but that's another story. So the motion on the table is to, the motion is House File 2740, move to re-refer as amended to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you, members. Seeing no more, oh wait, we have the minutes.
And move the minutes.
Representative Brussell has moved the minutes.
March 27th.
Of March 27th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Same sign. All right, we are now adjourned.